You know, the Bible describes for us the life and the account of many great heroes of faith. Among the many that are listed within the pages of Scripture, there are two that I personally find to be particularly exceptional. And I don't know if you've ever thought about it before, but these two that I'd like for us to think about briefly, actually, while they are separated not only by geography, separated by culture, separated even by the law of God that governed them at the particular time, separated by centuries, they experienced a number of things that are remarkably similar. They demonstrated qualities and character that is remarkably similar. And this morning, I'd like for us to think together for just a few moments about six ways that as we compare two men of faith, Joseph and Daniel, we can learn a number of lessons from looking at the lives of Joseph and Daniel. First of all, I'd like us to notice that both of these men were taken captive from their homeland and taken to a land that was not their own. Now, the circumstances of that captivity, the circumstances of what led them to those conditions were vastly different. Joseph, to begin with, we'll notice in Genesis chapter 37, I'd like us to begin reading in verse 12. We'll notice what led to his circumstance. Joseph, one of the 12 sons of Jacob, you'll remember because of Jacob's fondness for the woman that he really wanted to marry to begin with, Rachel, he probably showed favoritism to the sons of Rachel in a way that he should not have. And that led to jealousy. That led his brothers to ultimately resent him and act in a way, as we'll notice, that was very heartbreaking indeed. Begin reading with me in Genesis chapter 37, start in verse 12, and we'll go down quite a ways. Then his brothers went to feed their flocks in Shechem. And Israel said to Joseph, Israel or Jacob said to Joseph, are not your brothers feeding the flock in Shechem? Come, I will send you to them. So he said to them, here I am. Then he said to him, please go and see if it is well with your brothers and well with the flocks and bring back word to me. So he sent him out to the valley of Hebron and went to Shechem. Now a certain man found him, and there he was wandering in the field. And the man asked him, saying, what are you seeking? So he said, I am seeking my brothers. Please tell me where they are feeding their flocks. And the man said, they have departed from here, for I heard them say, let us go to Dothan. So Joseph went after his brothers and found them in Dothan. And when they saw him afar off, even before he came near them, they conspired against him to kill him. It is remarkable here to even imagine the kind of hatred within a family of brothers that should love each other that had developed as they hear, even seeing him coming, they want to do him harm. Now we're going to see in the next verse why they had some of that resentment. You'll remember that God had given to him some dreams about some things that would happen in the future, where in fact the time would come where his own family would bow down to him. Now little did he understand, little did his brothers understand, that that was foreshadowing the time in which he would actually grant deliverance to his entire family and salvation in the time of famine. But that's not what they thought about at this time. Notice verse 19. Then they said to one another, look, this dreamer is coming. Come, therefore, let us now kill him and cast him into some pit. And we shall say, some wild beast has devoured him. We shall see what will become of his dreams. But Reuben heard it, and he delivered him out of their hands and said, let us not kill him. And Reuben said to them, shed no blood, but cast him into this pit, which is in the wilderness, and do not lay a hand on him, that he might deliver him out of their hands and bring him back to his father. So it came to pass when Joseph had come to his brothers that they stripped Joseph of his tunic, the tunic of many colors that was on him. Now that was one of the badges of this favoritism that his father had probably shown to him, and that he had given him this coat of many colors that he had not given to his other brothers. And that became kind of a badge of their resentment towards him. Notice verse 24. Then they took him and cast him into a pit. And the pit was empty. There was no water in it. and they sat down to eat a meal. Then they lifted up their eyes and looked, and there was a company of Ishmaelites coming from Gilead with their camels, bearing spices, balm, and myrrh, on their way to carry them down to Egypt. So Judah said to his brothers, "What profit is there if we kill him, our brother, and conceal his blood? Come and let us sell him to the Ishmaelites, and let not our hand be upon him, for he is our brother and our flesh." And his brothers listened. Then Midianite traders passed by, so the brothers pulled Joseph up and lifted him out of the pit and sold him to the Ishmaelites for 20 shekels of silver. And they took Joseph to Egypt. I want you to think about this and think about Joseph and what condition it put him in. It's very easy for us sometimes to think, you know, that circumstances are overwhelming, that circumstances dictate our choices, that circumstances dictate our attitude, circumstances dictate our faithfulness. Yet I want you to put yourself in the place of Joseph, rejected by his family, rejected by his brothers that should have loved him and cared for him, and in fact sold for 20 pieces of silver so that he might become a slave, taken away, far away from his own land, to the land of Egypt. Well, as we think about Daniel, in a different time and in a different circumstance, Daniel went through a very similar kind of circumstance. It was not necessarily that he was rejected by his brothers. It was not that he was sold as a slave. But Daniel comes onto the scene at a time in which Israel, and I use the term Israel referring to the Jews in general, by that time, you'll remember that Israel and Judah had become separated. Israel had already gone into captivity to the Assyrians. But Judah, because of her unfaithfulness, would ultimately come to that time in which the Babylonians would come and would oppress them and ultimately begin a series of exiles, a series of times in which they would take Jews away from Judah into exile into Babylon. And if we read in Daniel chapter 1, beginning in verse 1, it tells us about the circumstances under which this young man, who was probably one who was respected, perhaps one from noble family, who didn't deserve what he's about to experience, but he's taken away from his familiar circumstances, and he's put in a very different kind of environment. Read with me in verse 1 to begin with. "In the third year of the reign of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, came to Jerusalem and besieged it. And the Lord gave Jehoiakim, king of Judah, into his hand, and some of the articles of the house of God, which he carried into the land of Shinar, to the house of his God. And he brought the articles into the treasure house of his God. Then the king instructed Ashpenaz, the master of the eunuchs, to bring some of the children of Israel and some of the king's descendants and some of the nobles, young men in whom there was no blemish, but good-looking, gifted in all wisdom, possessing knowledge and quick to understand, who had ability to serve the king's palace and with whom they might teach the language and the literature of the Chaldeans. And the king appointed for them a daily provision of the king's delicacies and of the wine which he drank, and 3 years of training for them, so that at the end of that time they might serve before the king. Now, from among those of the sons of Judah were," and notice our focus, "Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah." Think about this. It's different in many respects from Joseph. He's not betrayed by his brothers, but it was the sinfulness of his nation that led him, a noble one. Notice the way it's described here: good looking, talented, everything in the world going for him. And yet, where does he find himself? Taken far away from his homeland, brought into a condition that he didn't deserve. A condition in which, in all likelihood, one might imagine, this man doesn't stand a chance. There's no way he can serve the Lord faithfully. And that leads us to another similarity between the two, because not only were both taken captive into away far away from their homeland, but they were also taken into a place and a condition that was very ungodly. In the example of Joseph, look over in Genesis chapter 41 for a moment, and we jump ahead a little bit in time. And you might just kind of hold your place in both of these passages because we're going to move back and forth between Genesis and Daniel this morning. But if we jump ahead a little bit in Joseph's life, in Genesis chapter 41 and verse 45, it describes something that happens to him when things are turning a little bit more in his favor. But I want you to notice something that is said that gives us a little bit of a picture of the environment into which Joseph was placed. Did he go into an area in which all of those around him worshiped the God of Abraham and Isaac? Did he go into a place in which people were worshiping the Lord in a way that was pleasing and acceptable? Could he just go down the street and worship God anywhere that he chose? No. He went into Egypt, into a place of wickedness, a place of idolatry. And even at a time in Genesis chapter 41 and verse 45, when things are turning around a little bit for Joseph and Pharaoh bestows some favor upon him, notice a little description that is given in chapter 41, verse 45, when it tells us, "And Pharaoh called Joseph's name Zaphnath-Paneah, and he gave him as a wife Asenath," now notice this, "the daughter of Potipharah, priest of On." So Joseph went out over all the land of Egypt. Now, you might look at that and say, well, what does that indicate really about the wickedness of the society? Well, think about this. He's blessed. He's given a wife, but his own father-in-law is a pagan priest. On is believed to refer to a place rather than a god. The Egyptians served many different gods. Gods that looked like animals. Gods that looked like a combination of men and animals. They had all sorts of ideas about the way in which these gods functioned. And their religion and their lifestyle was intermingled with immorality. Do you remember the way in Hebrews chapter 11, verse 24 and 25, when it describes Moses in his condition, when he was elevated in Egypt? Do you remember what it says? "By faith, Moses, when he became of age, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to suffer affliction with the people of God than to enjoy the passing pleasures of sin." Egypt is not a place in which it's going to be easy to serve God. He's taken into a different place, into an ungodly society. Well, what about Daniel? Go to Daniel chapter 1 where we left off. And I want you to notice just a little something that is said in Daniel chapter 1 verse 7. You remember it just told us about these four young men. Daniel, Hananiah, Azariah, Mishael. We know those three better by the names Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. But we're talking about the same individual. So, well, the reason we know them by that name, or those names, notice what verse 7 says. "To them the chief of the eunuchs gave names. He gave Daniel the name Belteshazzar." Now, you know, it's curious. I don't know why it is. We know the other men by their names that were given to them more commonly. But Daniel, that's not the case. I'll suggest one reason that that might be the case in just a moment. But notice, to Hananiah, Shadrach. To Mishael, Meshach. And to Azariah, Abednego. Now, why would it be that we might know Daniel a little bit more by his Hebrew name? Well, possibly because the name Daniel means God is my judge. Do you know what the name Belteshazzar means? They probably meant that as an honor in giving him this name. But the name Belteshazzar actually means the treasure of Bel. Now, not Bel like we'd speak of a southern Bel. Bel was a pagan god. In fact, the apocryphal book that's written between the Old and the New Testament, while it may be a little bit after this period, and so we might question some things about it, it describes the pagan worship that these folks gave to the god Bel, saying that daily the Babylonians offered 12 measures of flour to Bel, 40 sheep to Bel, 6 vessels of wine to Bel. It was a false god. Now add to this, go back to Daniel and look with me over in chapter 6 and verse 7. Not only were the Babylonians given to this kind of idolatry of false gods, they found themselves on occasion even given to the practice of worshiping a human being as if he was a god. Do you remember over in chapter 6 and verse 7? Now, this is actually a means by which his opponents are going to try to trap Daniel. But do you remember what they tried to bring about? Look at verse 7. All the governors of the kingdom and the administrators and the satraps and the counselors and the advisors have consulted together, establish a royal statute and make a firm decree that whoever petitions any god or man for 30 days except you, O king, shall be cast into the den of lions. They're going to treat this king as if he is a god. That's the environment in which Daniel finds himself. You know, it's very easy for us sometimes to think, well, you know, my faithfulness is related to my environment, the people I'm around. And it's certainly true. New Testament teaches evil companions corrupt good morals. But we need to understand that we can serve God faithfully regardless of the fact that we may be in a circumstance or an environment that's not favorable. We can serve God faithfully even if we find ourselves surrounded by those that are not people of faith, surrounded by those that are given to idolatry or wickedness or immorality, just like Joseph and just like Daniel. But I want us to notice a third similarity between these young men, and that is that both demonstrate a wonderful example of resisting temptation, even in youth. You know, sometimes I think our culture has had a tendency to kind of treat it as if, well, you know, when you're young, sow your wild oats. You know, you can't be expected to behave like an older man or an older woman would. You know, the young, they're the ones that are going to be impulsive. They're the ones that are going to give themselves to sin and to temptation. Well, I understand that there are temptations of youth, but I also understand that there can be a strength that comes in youth. And I also understand that sometimes those kinds of values that are established in youth can help to safeguard our behavior and our values in the years to come. And while, yes, it is true that sometimes there are things that are a part of the temptations of youth that are hard to overcome, is it any more difficult to overcome an entrenched behavior of wickedness in old life or in old age? No. I want us to learn from the example that we see of these two fine young men, Joseph and Daniel. In Genesis chapter 39, verses 1 through 12, we've learned already that Joseph was betrayed by his brothers, sold as a slave. What in the world can you expect of him? He's away from all kinds of spiritual influences. Surely this man will give himself to the wickedness and immorality of his culture. Surely this man will simply be looking for any kind of opportunity for advancement or pleasure or whatever might be offered. That's not the case. Read with me in Genesis chapter 39, beginning in verse 1. Now Joseph had been taken down to Egypt, and Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh, captain of the guard, an Egyptian, bought him from the Ishmaelites who had taken him down there. The Lord was with Joseph, and he was a successful man, and he was in the house of his master, the Egyptian. And his master saw that the Lord was with him, and that the Lord made all that he did to prosper in his hand. So Joseph found favor in his sight and served him. Then he made him overseer of his house, and all that he had he put under his authority. So it was that from the time that he had made him overseer of his house and all that he had, that the Lord blessed the Egyptian's house for Joseph's sake, and the blessing of the Lord was on all that he had in the house and in the field. Now, no problem so far, right? Well, understand, first of all, that it would have been very difficult even to get to this stage, because you're talking about a man who, in spite of circumstance, he serves the Lord, and these blessings come from the Lord. It's not that he was just out there making a profit. It was not that he was just out there pursuing every wicked way that he could find to take advantage. He was serving the Lord faithfully all along. But I want you to notice what happens to this young man. Verse 6. Thus he left all that he had in Joseph's hand, and he did not know what he had except for the bread which he ate. Now Joseph was handsome in form and appearance. And it came to pass after these things that his master's wife cast longing eyes on Joseph, and she said, "Lie with me." But he refused and said to his master's wife, "Look, my master does not know what is with me in the house, and he has committed all that he has to my hand. There is no one greater in this house than I, nor has he kept back anything from me but you, because you are his wife. How then can I do this great wickedness and sin against God?" Stop there for a moment and notice the impact of this reaction on the part of this young man. If he had not done this, if he had sinned with this woman, you know, it might have been what most would expect. He is the servant of this woman's husband. So if he yields, he's just doing what his master's wife said to do. If he yields, he's just, you know, maybe he thought, well, maybe I could get some advantage within the house this way. Maybe I could advance some way. You know, no one in his family's around. No one among those that taught him to worship the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob was around. Maybe no one would have even noticed. But Joseph recognizes who would have noticed. How could I do this great wickedness and sin against God? So what does he do? You know, think about the difficult circumstance you're put in. If he says no, what will it lead to? This is his master's wife. But listen to what happens. Verse 10. So it was as she spoke to Joseph day by day, and he did not heed her to lie with her or to be with her. But it happened about this time when Joseph went into the house to do his work, and none of the men of the house was inside, that she caught him by the garment, saying, "Lie with me." But he left his garment in her hand and fled and ran outside. Now, we're going to see the results of that in just a moment. But I want you to think about this as we think about what a marvelous example this shows of a young man in a foreign environment, an ungodly society, committing himself to do what God wanted, even when all other circumstances would have made it much easier for him to do what felt good to him, to do what his environment pressured him to do. Go back to Daniel chapter 1. Different circumstance. But you'll remember that as Daniel, Hananiah, Azariah, and Mishael are put into the king's palace, all of the delicacies are brought before them. Now, we might look at that and we might not think much about that. You know, a nice spread of food is a nice thing to have. But remember, Daniel, Hananiah, Azariah, and Mishael are Jews. They are under and subject to the law of Moses. The law of Moses commanded certain things that they could eat and certain things that they could not eat, certain things that were clean, certain things that were unclean. In the same way that lying with Potiphar's wife would have been a sin against God, Daniel, Hananiah, Azariah, and Mishael understand it would have been a sin against God to eat of those things that the law of Moses commanded them not to eat of. Now, in that context, continue reading with me where we left off earlier. Verse 8 describes the circumstance that Daniel was put in. But Daniel purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself with the portion of the king's delicacies, nor with the wine which he drank. Therefore, he requested of the chief of the eunuchs that he might not defile himself. Now, God had brought Daniel into the favor and goodwill of the chief of the eunuchs. And the chief of the eunuchs said to Daniel, "I fear my lord, the king, who has appointed your food and drink, for why should he see your faces looking worse than the young man who are of age? Then you would endanger my head before the king." Now, if we go on and read the rest, we would see that what happens is Daniel says, "Well, you let us do what the Lord has commanded us to do." And what results? They're healthier. They are not gaunt and they are not skinny, and it's not that this man's life is in jeopardy. In fact, the Lord blesses them in the same way. Now, you know, you might think about this and think, well, what's the big deal? And how do we even relate that to us since we don't have dietary restrictions? Well, are there ever circumstances in which we're put in situations where, you know, we are surrounded by an ungodly environment. And there are things that are set before us that are a temptation. Whether you're talking about the kind of temptation Joseph faced. Or maybe it's, you know, that friend at school that, hey, you know, we're going to go out drinking tonight. Why don't you go with us? You know, hey, come to the dance. You know, there's hot girls at that dance. You know, or let's smoke. You know, whether you're talking about cigarettes or, you know, have you ever tried those kind of cigarettes that give you a little bit different effect? Those are things that run contrary to the command of our God. Those are things which do not become godliness. Are we going to have the courage like Daniel, like Joseph, to resist, or will we give in? Let's look at just a few final comparisons as we think about these young men. They were in a foreign land, an ungodly society. They faced temptation as young men. But you know, in their efforts to do what was right, it wasn't just that every step of the way they were blessed. Now, we read some things earlier that even as a servant of Potiphar, everything flourished in his hand. Well, that's until this circumstance happens with Potiphar's wicked wife. And if you go back to the text that we left off in Genesis chapter 39, it is because Joseph did what was right. It is because he was unwilling to yield to her advances that she lied about him. We read in verse 13 that he fled outside. But notice verse 14. And so it was when she saw that he had left his garment in her hand and fled outside, that she called to the men of her house and spoke to them, saying, "See, he has brought into us a Hebrew to mock us. He came in to me to lie with me and cried out with a loud voice." And it happened when he heard that I lifted my voice and cried out, that he left his garment with me and fled and went outside. So she kept his garment with her until the master came home. Then she spoke to him with words like these, saying, "The Hebrew servant whom you brought to us came to me to mock me. So it happened, as I lifted up my voice and cried out, that he left his garment with me and fled outside." So it was when his master heard these words, which his wife spoke to him, saying, "Your servant did to me after this manner," that his anger was aroused. Then Joseph's master took him and put him into the prison, a place where the king's prisoners were confined, and he was there in the prison. You know, sometimes we have a tendency to kind of think, and I think our world has contributed to this a little bit, that, you know, if you do what's right, everything will go well. The denominational world has succumbed to an attitude that's sometimes called the gospel of prosperity. You serve God, you're faithful to Him, you'll get a new car, you'll get a good job, you'll get a good woman, you'll get a good man, whatever it may be. Now, I recognize that there are times that God grants physical blessings, but sometimes standing up for what is right in an ungodly world surrounded by ungodly people means that we will suffer. It was not just for Joseph to be imprisoned because he did what was right. And yet Joseph had to experience that. But you know, the very same thing happens to Daniel. We read a few moments ago in Daniel chapter 6 about the conspiracy that is offered by enemies of Daniel. When they realize that he's an honorable man, they realize that he does what's right. You remember, they go to the king and they play upon the king's own vanity and say, "We should make it where anybody that worships another god except you will be punished." Now, how does Daniel respond to that? Daniel chapter 6, begin with me in verse 12, and we'll see exactly how Daniel responds to that. Are we going to be faithful to the Lord when circumstances are advantageous to that faithfulness? In other words, when it's easy for us, is that the only time we're going to be faithful to the Lord? Or when obstacles are placed before us, opposition is placed before us, when we're mocked because we're going to wear modest clothing, when we're mocked because we're going to be at services when we could be at that ball game, when we're mocked because we're not going to run around with others, behave in ways that are immoral, are we willing to serve the Lord then? This is a matter of life and death with Daniel. And I want us to notice what happens. Daniel chapter 6, beginning in verse 12. And when they went before the king and spoke concerning the king's decree, "Have you not signed a decree that every man who petitions any god or man within 30 days except you, O king, shall be cast into the den of lions?" The king answered and said, "The thing is true, according to the law of the Medes and the Persians, which does not alter." So they answered and said before the king, "That Daniel, who is one of the captives from Judah, does not show due regard for you, O king, for the decrees that you have signed, but makes his petition three times a day." There's something interesting about that. The account describes for us that when Daniel heard this law, Daniel saw the pressure he was put under. He behaved as his custom was, as he had been doing. Nothing changed. Nothing changed about what he had to do before God at all. And the king, when he heard these words, was greatly displeased with himself and set his heart on Daniel to deliver him. And he labored till the going down of the sun to deliver him. Then these men approached the king and said to the king, "Know, O king, that it is the law of the Medes and the Persians that no decree or statute which the king establishes may be changed." So the king gave the command, and they brought Daniel and cast him into the den of lions. But the king spoke, saying to Daniel, "Your God, whom you serve continually, he will deliver you." Now we know, in fact, that God did deliver him. We know, in fact, that God was with him. But did Daniel deserve that kind of treatment? Did Daniel deserve that circumstance? Absolutely not. And yet, as one who was faithful to God, he was unjustly imprisoned. You know, we could look at other things as well. In their work, isn't it interesting that both of these men found themselves in circumstances in which they interpreted the dreams of kings? Joseph, what grants him deliverance out of that jail is the fact that he'd been able to interpret the dreams of some of his fellow prisoners. And even though there's a long delay, he eventually is able to interpret the dreams of the Pharaohs that will allow Egypt to be spared during a time of famine. Daniel, although he is put in a situation where he's far away from home, he's in the midst of a pagan world, it is Daniel, as we've talked about in our Sunday morning adult class, that is granted this insight into the coming of the very thing that we enjoy this morning, being a part of that eternal kingdom of Christ the Messiah. When Daniel interprets the dream of Nebuchadnezzar about this statue that represents different kingdoms, and that statue being destroyed by that eternal kingdom that would be set up. But both Joseph and Daniel as well would receive prominence and honor in spite of their circumstances, in spite of the fact that they were captives, in spite of the fact that they were mistreated. It would be Joseph that would be raised to a position in which he would deliver all of Egypt. And it would be Daniel that would be put in a position in which, having interpreted the dream of Nebuchadnezzar when others could not, he was granted great authority and great prominence. Have you ever thought about all of the similarities that exist between these two men? You know, I think it's interesting. I think as we think about our own lives, the real lesson to this is not just an exploration in history. As we think about Daniel and Joseph, another similarity, if you've never thought about this, I am not familiar with anything that's found in Scripture that ever describes anything negative about Daniel or about Joseph. And that indicates to you and I, these men are worthy of our imitation. These men serve as examples to you and I. You know, we may not be in the circumstances that we'd always like to be. We may find ourselves in situations where we are surrounded by ungodly influences. We may be placed in temptations, either like those of Daniel or Joseph, but temptations that others around us might think, there's no way you can resist that. But you know, Daniel and Joseph were just men. And if Daniel and Joseph can serve God faithfully, even in the face of opposition, even in the face of unjust persecution, what does that mean for you and I? It challenges us that we can do what's right. It challenges us that we can serve God in our generation. you're here this morning, you've never been obedient to the gospel of Jesus Christ. Think about the examples of these great men, different times than ours, but in the circumstances they were placed in, the obligations they had set before them, they did what was right regardless. Now, all of us have sinned and fall short of the glory of God. But thanks be to God through His mercy and through the love that He's shown us in the sacrifice of His Son. He offers us redemption if we'll be obedient to the gospel. If we'll put our faith in Jesus as the Son of God, confessing that faith before men, repent of our sins, and being baptized into Christ for the remission of our sins. We become a part of that eternal kingdom that Daniel was able to foresee. If we, as children of God, find ourselves struggling, find ourselves stumbling, find ourselves overcome by sin, Jesus Christ ever acts as our mediator and our intercessor between God and man. If we will but confess to God the Father through Jesus Christ, taking advantage of the opportunity that we have as brothers and sisters, give an arm and a shoulder to one another, to pray for each other when we find ourselves struggling. If we can help you in that way, we invite you to come while we stand and sing.